Okay, good morning, everyone, and welcome everyone to our Sunday morning shiur. Today, for Parshas Kisisa, I thought to do something a little bit off the beaten path and speak about something which comes up in halacha only occasionally, but it's an interesting outcome of the story of the Chet HaEgel, which the dominant part of Parshas Kisisa, obviously, is that incident, the Chet of that with the Egel Azov. And when we read it every year, so we understand that obviously it had ramifications as far as the relationship between Hashem and the Klal Yisrael and so forth. But what impact did this have on Halacha? So if we'll start here, if you look at the sheet on number one, the Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah tells us, the Mishnah itself is not on the sheet, but the Mishnah discusses which horns are acceptable to use as a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And in other words, we know that obviously the preferred horn would be the horn of a ram, because that was exactly the animal that was involved in the Akedas Yitzchak. However, the Mishnah tells us that kol shofaros ksherim, that all shofars, the horns of all animals, would be acceptable for the purpose of the mitzvah, chutz mishel para. The Mishnah says that the one exception is that you cannot use the horn of a bull or the horn of a cow. You cannot use that. That would not be acceptable for tekiah shofar. That's what the Mishnah says, and the reason the Mishnah gives is because we find in Psukim that the horn of a par, the horn of a bull, is not called a shofar; it's called something else. That's what the Mishnah says. Okay, so the Gemara proceeds to give a second reason, and here we pick it up from the beginning of the where we have it on the sheet. Ula Amar, Ula says, "Hainu taima derabbanan." It's actually Machlokas in the Mishnah, but the Rabbanon, the consensus opinion is what we mentioned, that you cannot use the horn of a cow. So Ula says the reason for this halacha is k'derav chista, is based on a statement that Rav Chista made. The Amr Rav Chista, because Rav Chista said, Mipnei ma ein kohen gadol nichnas bebigdei zav lifnai v'lifnim lavod avoda. Rav Chista asked the following question. We know that on Yom Kippur, so the Kohen Gadol would go for the one time of the year, the only time that anyone ever entered into the Kodesh HaKadoshim was on Yom Kippur. The Kohen Gadol entered three different times into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that was the one and only day of the year that this took place. Now we know, we read in last week's Parsha, Parshas Tetzaveh, that the Kohen Gadol had a larger number of begodim. His outfit was consisted of more components than that of a Kohen Hedyot. A Kohen Hedyot wore four begodim, four items of clothing, and the Kohen Gadol wore eight. From the eight that the Kohen Gadol wore, some of them were completely gold, such as the tzitz, the plate that the Kohen Gadol wore on his forehead, was made completely out of gold, and others had golden threads in them. Now we know that when it came Yom Kippur, so the Kohen Gadol wore the regular his regular begodim when he did certain avodas, but when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Kohen Gadol had to change. He had to change into big day lavan, or the linen clothes. There was a different set of clothing of begodim for the specific service that took place inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He had to take off. He could not go in wearing the regular begodim. So Rav Chista asked, why is this? Why did the Torah insist on this? Says the Gemara, Lefi she'ein kategar na'ase sanegar. Says the Gemara, because ein kategar, kategar means an accuser. An accuser cannot be a defender. An accuser, ein kategar na'ase sanegar, an accuser cannot be a defender. And thus, the gold in the garments of the Kohen Gadol are an accuser. Why is that? Because it brings to mind the sin of the golden calf, of the Egel Azov. So therefore, says Rav Chista, that it's for this reason that the Kohen Gadol could not go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with those garments. He had to change and put on garments that had absolutely no gold in them. That, so says Rav Chisda. Now, on that basis, so what does that have to do with us? So the Gemara is saying, similarly, the reason why the Rabbanan in the Mishnah said that all shofars are acceptable for use on Rosh Hashanah, except for the shofar of a par, so why should that be? Why can't you use the horn of a cow, of a bull? The reason is because of this issue, because Ein Kateger Nasa Sanega, because that also brings the memory. In other words, the Egel HaZav, so there were two aspects. There was Egel and Zav. So the same way that the gold was banned, so too the cow, the calf, was banned as well. That's what the Gemara says. Now, you'll say, one second, but how could that be? There are so many other things that in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, we read 2 weeks ago, we're going to read again this week, that were made out of gold. Right? And not just that, but there were other things that were even brought into the, there was something that was brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim that was also reminiscent of it. In other words, if we imagine, in other words, what happened when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur? Right? So there were a few things that he did. So one of them, the most famous, was that he brought the Ketores, he brought the incense into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which was a big dispute. It became a very big issue during the era of the second Beis HaMikdash, because how exactly that was supposed to be done was a source of a contentious debate between the Tzdukim and the Prushim, between the Sadducees and the traditionalists. And the Tzdukim said, they interpreted the Pasuk that says, Ki ba'ana ne'ro'el akaporas, that it meant that the Ketores had to already be rising before the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So therefore, in their view, the way to do it would be that the Kohen Gadol took the fire pan with the coals that were hot, and he put the incense on it outside before he walked into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that when he walked in, it was already smoking. Now this was against the Kabbalah that the Chazal had. The Chazal had a tradition that's not what the Pasuk means. The Pasuk means that only in the Kodesh HaKadoshim should this be done. So this was the most glaring issue that existed on the Yom Kippur service. This is why if one learns the beginning of Maseches Yuma, so we're told that the Kohen Gadol before Yom Kippur was administered an oath that he had to swear that he was going to do the right way. This is what they were worried about primarily. This was a very big source of contention, and we know during the era of the second Mikdash, so the Kohanim Gedolim were very often appointed by the government, and sometimes you had complete ignoramuses who were the Kohen Gadol. The Mishnah tells us that in the beginning of Maseches Yuma, and you also had situations where people paid their way into being the Kohen Gadol, even people who turned out to be righteous, the very famous Yeshua ben Gamwa, who has become a legend in Jewish history for his dedication to Jewish education. So the Chazal tell us that he had his wife was a very wealthy woman, and she paid that he should be chosen to be the Kohen Gadol. So those types of things did not happen during the era of the first Beis HaMikdash. The Kohanim Gedolim were virtually all tzaddikim, but in the second Beis HaMikdash, other than Shimon HaTzaddik, it was always an issue. So therefore, you had a lot of things going on, a lot of concern. But anyway, so the Kohen Gadol would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and Yom Kippur, and what was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So you had the Aron with the Kruvim. What was the Aron made out of? So the Aron was laden with gold. The Aron was made out of gold. What were the Kruvim made out of? They were with gold. What was one of the other things that the Kohen Gadol did when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, aside from the Ketores? He would go in and sprinkle the blood from certain karbanos, right? The first carbon that we say in the Avodah on Yom Kippur, right? We recount how the Kohen would sprinkle the blood. Achas, achas, va'achas. He would sprinkle the blood in two different locations and so forth. So one of the karbanos that he would sprinkle the blood for was his own carbon of atonement, which was a par, which was a calf. So the question presents itself that what's going on over here? You're telling me that the Kohen Gadol can't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim wearing golden clothing because Ein Kateger Nasa Seneger. It's going to conjure up memories of the Egel Azov, What about everything else? What about the fact that he has the blood of a par that's being sprinkled there? What about the fact that the only item that existed in the Kosher Kedushin was an empty room, except for the fact there was one item there, and that was the Aron, and the Aron was gold. So what is this idea, Enkateger Nasa Seneger? So the Gemara right away asks these questions. So the Gemara says, the law says the Gemara on the end of the fourth line, could this be? You can't do this. For Ikadampar, what about the blood of the calf? Why was that acceptable? Says the Gemara, hol the ishtini. The Gemara says that the reason why that's not a problem. Why not? Because that has changed its appearance. And it doesn't have the appearance of a calf. It's just blood. So when you see the blood, you don't necessarily identify that this is the blood of a par. If you knew that's what it was, it's one thing. But it doesn't have the appearance, and it doesn't advertise itself as the blood of a calf. So therefore, that would not be a problem. Whereas the big days of that the Kohen wore, so there was the golden strands were visible. So that already is a problem. Yes, then. This is a Kabbalah that they had. This is a Kabbalah that Chazal had. So, yeah, upstairs.
Okay, so...
Right, no, but I'm saying, but the point is, the Gemara is always looking for the gather. In other words, what was the rule? In other words, there has to be some rhyme or reason to this. It just can't be random that this the Torah was upset about and this the Torah was not upset about. So that's what the Gemara says. So then the Gemara asks further. The Gemara says, V'ikah aron v'kaporis ukruv. The Gemara says, what do you mean? You had the Aron, and you had the covering of the Aron, the Kaporis, the piece on top of the Aron, and on top of that with the Kruvim. Every single one of those things were gold. So why is that not a problem? And you can't tell me that it changed its appearance. Says the Gemara, Chote Bal Yakriv Kamrinon. The Gemara says that we're talking, that's also not a problem, because the problem only exists if you're coming to offer an atonement. If you're coming to do something, you're coming to bring to perform a ritual, to perform a service, that's where there's the problem. But the Aron was just, so to speak, furniture. In other words, that was an item that existed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but it wasn't part of the service itself. It wasn't an avodah. So therefore the Gemara says that's also not a problem. So then the Gemara says, wait, but it's still not good enough. The Gemara says, but what about the Ketoris? When the Kohen Gadol brought the Ketoris into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so how did he do it? He had a fire pan, and he had a spoon that they used to pour the incense onto the coals. So to scoop up the incense. And those items were also both made out of gold. So here you have, it's made out of gold, it's part of a service. Right? It has not changed its appearance. So why is that acceptable? Says the Gemara, this is also no problem, because chote bal yisnoe kamrinon. The Gemara says, because really the problem is only if it's being done for adornment. It's only a problem if it's going to be the person trying to make himself look good, like the Big Day Kahuna. He's trying to look good, so you're making yourself look good with gold. You're coming in on Yom Kippur to the Kodesh HaKadoshim wearing golden garments to give yourself glory, like the Pasuk says, covet ol sefaris. That's what you're trying to do. That's unacceptable, because that reminds us of Egel Azov. But to use a spoon, which is part of a service, so that's okay too. Even though it's part of an avoda, the Gemara says that's also okay. All right. So everything the restriction is getting cut down by the minute. Yeah. Yes.
Is that be the reason for the meal, because
we're
the
meal. The meal. Oh, I don't know. It could, maybe. I didn't think about that. Could be. Okay. So, all right. So there you have it. So you have, so the Gemara has cut it down. Now, you'll say, okay, so therefore, the title of the shiur was, it was originally sent out missing a few words, but then it was resent. The title of the shiur was, can you do mitzvahs with items made out of gold? So here, that's the discussion. So it would seem from all of this that there are three requirements in order for it to be a problem. Right? What are the three requirements? The three requirements are, just a minute, did I skip one? I did skip one. Hold on, we're not finished yet. The Gemara asks, V'ikah bigdei zov mibachutz. The Gemara then asks, one second, but the Kohen Gadol wore the golden garments on Yom Kippur outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So why was that not a problem? There, it appears like gold, it's making him look good, and it's part of a service. So it has all of the problems. So why is that acceptable? Says the Gemara, no, because there's one more rule, and that is, mi b'chutz. That's because it was done outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But mi b'fnim kamrinan, the problem only exists inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Which means, and that's the end of the discussion, which means that in order for there to be a problem, the reason, the whole issue of the Kohen Gadol going in on Yom Kippur wearing the golden vestments, what would be the problem? The problems were existed because of the fact that, number one, it was inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the holiest place. Number two, it was in its original form. It had the appearance still of gold. Number three was that he was using the gold to adorn himself, to make himself look good. And because all of those three things existed together, that's why there was a problem. Which would mean that other than that, there should be no problem. Right? In other words, which would mean that if we want to do, if today somebody wants to have a golden menorah, let's say to light the Hanukkah candles, so there would be no problem. Right? Because it doesn't have any of those things. Right, so therefore, it's me. Well, at least it's me b'chutz. It's outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and so for that itself would be the knockout right there. Right, because you have to be three for three in order for there to be a problem. So, if you're following the Gemara, though, there's one question left. The Gemara's question was, but hold on a minute. But we said at the outset that this was an explanation for why you can't use a shofar of a cow. You can't use the shofar shopara. So what do you mean? The shofar was not blown in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right there, that's it. The game's over. There should be no problem. The only problem is if you go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right, that was the Kohen Gadol himself wore golden garments on Yom Kippur, just not in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So as anything outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim should be exempted of problem. So the Gemara right away asked this question. The Gemara says, what about shofar? So the Gemara says a remarkable thing. So the Gemara says, shofar nami v'chutzu? Answers the Gemara, kivan delizikaranhu kibifnim dami. Says the Gemara that since it is coming, lizikaron, since the tekiah shofar is coming as a positive reminder, so to speak, to God about the Bnei Yisrael, so therefore that's as if it was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, so so if you look at Rashi here, Rashi right underneath, it's the last Rashi there. He says, "Shofar nami afal gaf the less famous shemcholte bal yakru." Even though it's not a service in that sense, it's not part of the service of the Beis Hamikdash. The less famous shemcholte bal yisnoa, nor is it a form of adornment. But kivan the lizikaron kasi kibigdei koin gadol shalifnim dami. The way the Mefarshim explain this is because the tekiah shofar is the vehicle that brings the tefillos of Rosh Hashanah to God. In other words, that the tekiah shofar is not just the, you know, obviously it's a mitzvah in its own right, and therefore it's a very important thing that we everyone pays careful attention. It comes to people who can't even make it to shul the whole day, come at least to hear the tekiah shofar because it's a mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah. But we're told here in the Gemara, and the way the Mefarshim explained that, it's a lot more than that. It's not just a mitzvah, but this mitzvah is the vehicle, this is the equivalent of the Kohen Gadol being in the Holy of Holies. It's the equivalent of the Kohen Gadol being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's why it's taken so seriously. The reason why people are so medactic and people try to, oftentimes you have an inspirational speech that's given before the Tekiah Shofar is because this is an incredibly crucial part of the day. Because this is the equivalent of the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and Yom Kippur. The Tekiah Shofar is the vehicle that brings the Tefillos of Klal Yisrael to Ribbono Shel Olam, and therefore it has that special status, and because of that, says the Gemara, that's a reason why a shofar shalpar is disqualified. Okay, there you have it. Now, the question one might ask is that, okay, this is very interesting, so we have a concept, Ein Kateger Nasas Haneger, that based on the story of the Egel Azov, comes out a situation, comes out a halacha, that an accuser cannot be a defender. So you'll say, but 1 minute, but isn't there an idea of tshuva? The whole idea of tshuva, the Gemara tells us The Gemara tells us what is the example. The Gemara Maseches Yuma that Peivav says, what is the example of tshuva shlema? What is the example of a person who has perfectly, completely repented from his sins? Says the Gemara, if a person is in the exact same situation that he sinned in, and he manages to withstand the temptation that in this time around he doesn't do it, so that is, so even though it's exact same circumstances, so says the Gemara, that is tshuva gemura, that is the highest form of tshuva. That's not the only form of tshuva, but that's the highest form of tshuva. So you'll say, 1 minute, but we're saying over here that you're not supposed to, you know, that this is not a good idea. In other words, it would come out, the concept of tshuva would dictate that really, if a person should take the thing that he sinned with and do it again in a positive performance. So therefore, one would think that you should actually go ahead and bedafka on Yom Kippur, use as much gold and as much anything that has to do with a cow, it should all be used, bedafka, because we're doing tshuva. So that's the tshuva. We're showing Hashem, listen, we messed up one time with the Chet HaEgel, no more. Now look what you have. Now look at the whole Beis HaMikdash is all gold, everything is gold, and it hasn't affected us in a bad way. To the contrary, we're using it for a mitzvah, and we're doing karbonos with Purim, and we're blowing the shofar of a bull. So what could be better than that? So why? How do these two concepts go together? In other words, you have the concept of tshuva, and you have this other concept, which says that if a sin was done with a certain item, so we avoid that item. We don't use that item for mitzvahs. How do these two things go together? So in the commentary, Aruch Lener, on the it's actually first discussed by the Marsha, that the Marsha in his commentary on the Gemara is not on the sheet, but he quotes a Rashi that we find in Parsha Shmini, that we find in the beginning of Parsha Shmini. So the Torah speaks about the inauguration of the Mishkan, and it says that on the eighth day there was a special service that was supposed to be performed by Aaron. Moshe said to Aaron, "Kravo amizbeach, go to the mizbeach and start to bring sacrifices." So what was the first sacrifice? So the Torah says, "Vayakrev Aaron el mizbeach." That Aaron went to the Mizbeach, Vayishchat es Egel HaChatos Asherlo. That Aaron went ahead and slaughtered the Egel, the calf, of the Karban Chatos. And Rashi tells us that what was the significance of this, that it was an Egel. So Rashi says the significance was that this was coming to atone for the Chet HaEgel, that this was supposed to be an atonement. Right, especially Aaron, we'll soon see. Aaron himself was involved directly in the Chet HaEgel, right? So Rashi tells us the exact words of Rashi are, he says like this, Rashi says, Lohodia shemechaper lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, there was a very big significance here because Aaron's reputation took a hit as a result of the Chet HaEgel, because even though he intended only for good and he was the victim of Murphy's Law in the worst possible way it could happen, but all his plans went wrong, everything that he was hoping for backfired, but the fact of the matter is that his reputation took a hit. So the point of this carbon, of the Egel Achata, says Rashi, is to show everybody that Hashem is forgiving him. Al Yidei Egel Zeh, Al Kol Maisa Egel She'asa, for the entire Egel that he did. So here you see, so the Marsha says, so what's going on with this? You're telling me that you're not supposed to, so all right, it wasn't in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but you see this concept that there is an idea that you're bedakta supposed to use something that you sinned with to get a kapara. So you'll say, the technical difference that it wasn't the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so then it would come out a very bizarre thing. In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's an accuser. And outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's a defender. That's very strange. So the Aruch Lener, the Marsha doesn't have a good answer to this. He himself leaves it sort of hanging. So the Aruch Lener lived in the 1800s. He was the Rebbe of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch. His name was Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. So he says the following. He explains, I'll just paraphrase what he says. He says that the difference is that if it's coming to serve as a kapara for that sin itself, then it's okay. When Aaron brought that carbon, so that carbon was an atonement for the very sin that he did. So then, yes, when it comes to that form of that, that's tshuva. When it comes to tshuva, so then there's an idea that a person should make up for what he did exactly in the way that he did it. In other words, that he should be in that situation and not do it again. Or that he should use something that he sinned with in a positive way. That's tshuva. However, on Yom Kippur, when it came to the service in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that was trying to achieve a kapara for the Klal Yisrael in general, for all of their sins, and it had nothing to do specifically with the Chet HaEgel. So as such, for that, then it's not acceptable to bring in something from the Egel, to bring in something golden, or to bring in something that would have to do with a par. If you're doing tshuva for the very Aveira, then it's different. So that's what Aruch Lanera said. That's different. To do tshuva for that sin, that you could do. But if it's for some other thing, and you just happen to be using it, then it's not correct. Okay. Now, so what does this have to do with us? So you'll say, right, how does this tie into halacha? So there are situations in halacha that this actually comes up. And one of them is based on another example that we find in the Torah of this issue coming about. And that is in Parshas Chukas. So the Torah speaks about the Parah Aduma, the beginning of Parshas Chukas. It's going to be read in a few weeks as Parshas Parah. Right, the Torah speaks about the mitzvah of the Parah Aduma. And the Parah Aduma was the paradoxical mitzvah that it had the ability to purify a person who was Tameh, and yet the person, the Kohen, who performed the service himself, who started out being pure, became contaminated, became Tameh. That's the great paradox of the Parah Aduma. But nevertheless, the Torah tells us that this mitzvah also was given to serve as an atonement for the Egel Azah. It was it's brought in the Medrash that the mitzvah Parah Aduma was given to be used the same animal, that it should be an atonement for the Egel Azah. And what do we find there? The Torah tells us, like sort of nonchalantly, so to speak, you don't notice it when you read the parsha, but the Torah, when it speaks about the mitzvah, says, V'lokach Elazar HaKohen Midoma Be'etzpo, that the preparation of the Parah Aduma should be done by Elazar HaKohen. Now, when this mitzvah was said, Aaron HaKohen was still alive. Even though in Parshas Chukas we read about the passing of Aaron, but that happened later. When this mitzvah was given, Aaron was still alive. And now, if the Torah is insisting that a Kohen perform the ritual of the Parah Aduma, why was Aaron passed over and given to Elazar, his son? Why should that be? Say the Chazal, Ramban says it, and other people say it, because Aaron was the one who, so to speak, sinned with the Parah Aduma, and if this is coming to be an atonement for the Parah Aduma, so then he can't be involved. He can't be involved. So therefore, that would have to be done by his son. So the rules become a little bit more difficult now, because we just said a minute ago that if it's for tshuva, then it bedafka, it's a good thing to use the item that was the source of the sin. However, at the same time, the person who himself committed the sin, so if it's for his own personal atonement, that's one thing. That's what you have by the carbon that was mentioned in Parsha Shmini. But if it's for some other purpose, even, in other words, the mitzvah itself is a kapara for the Chet HaEgel, but not for the Aaron specifically, but for the entire Klal Yisrael, then the person who sinned can't be involved. Meaning that a person who did something wrong becomes an accuser, and as such, he cannot be involved to be a defender. And how does this affect us? So if you turn over the page, we have a halacha in the laws of Nesias Kapayim, in the laws of Duchenin, which probably doesn't come up so much by us, but theoretically is Nogeya. And the Shulchan Aruch says in Sif Lamid Hei, which is on the top four lines from the end of the top section, it says, Kohen Shaharag Es HaNefesh. If a Kohen has once killed somebody, Afilu B'Shogeg, even if he did it unintentionally, lo yisa es kapov, He should not duchen. He should not get up and give the bracha. Afilu osa tshuva. Even if he did tshuva for that sin, nevertheless, he should not duchen. Why not? So if you look down at the bottom of the Mishnah Berurah, Kuf Chaf Tes, which is five lines from the end of the section of the Mishnah Berurah, so he says, Tam Deyazu, the reason for this is, Desviriloi, the Mechaber, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, who said this halacha, holds, the afal pisha ein l'chad davar sha'omed b'pnei ha'tshuva, that even though you'll say that nothing stands in the way of tshuva, a person does tshuva, he's forgiven for everything. So then why should it be that this Kohen should not be able to duchen? Okay, so he committed a sin, but even for the sin of murder, it's possible to do tshuva. Right? So the fact of the matter is, why should this be held against him? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Mikol Mokom, ein kategar nases anegar. Says the Shulchan Aruch, says the Mishnah Berurah, this rule that a defender can, an accuser cannot be a defender, meaning that those hands that once killed somebody, those hands cannot be used to give a blessing to the Klal Yisrael. Even though the person did tshuva, it's fine he did tshuva. He's a tzaddik. He's 100. We don't hold it against him. We don't hold it against him. You can treat him with the greatest honor, and it's all fine and good as everything is forgotten. But those hands that were involved in a ritzicha, that were involved in a murder, those hands have a little bit of guilt attached to them, and therefore it cannot be a vehicle to go give a bracha. This is what the Mechaber holds, right? The Ein Roy says, Biadayim Elu Shaharagas HaNefesh, Ein Roy Lisa's Kap of Afal Pishas HaTshuva. Even if he killed someone unintentionally.
He's in the army.
Well, the army we'll get to in a minute. Hold on, we'll get to that. We'll see where this applies. Hold on, we got this. This is very relevant, because let's say you have an Israeli soldier as a Kohen.
Sure.
So and they duchen every day, right? So you're going to tell me that he comes back from a war, he can't duchen? I don't think anyone ever saw that, right? So why not? So we'll see in a minute. Yes, go ahead. That's what you're going to ask. Okay. So the question is, so when does this apply and when doesn't this apply? So it happens to be, now there are two scenarios, right? You have one scenario of the Israeli soldier, but there he's killing Goyim. He's killing Goyim. Now why should that make a difference? Goyim are also God's children. So the answer is because the source of this halacha is derived from a pasuk in the two psukim in the book of Yeshaya, in the very beginning of Yeshaya. It's actually the haftarah of the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, the haftarah Chazon Yeshayo, that it says Yedeichem Damim Meleu, that your hands were filled with blood, because the Jews in the era of the first Beis Hamikdash were involved in Shvichas Damim. We know the first temple, the first Mikdash, was destroyed because of three cardinal sins. One of them was murder. Who were they killing? They were killing each other, right? So then the pasuk says, it says Yedeichem Damim Meleu, and then it says right away, it could even be in the next pasuk, Uvefarischem Kapeichem, Hashem says, and when you stretch out your hands, I'm not going to pay any attention. So therefore, from that, based on that, they derive the halacha, that's the source of it. That, in other words, it's not just Ein Kateger Nasis Anegar. The rule itself did not, in itself, generate that halacha. I'm not sure why, but the Gemara says that it's based on these psukim. It's based on these psukim. The explanation for why it's no good, even though he did tshuva, is Ein Kateger Nasis Anegar. But the basic halacha is derived from the fact that the Jews in the time, Yeshaya was rebuking them for the fact that they were committing murder of their fellow Jews. And Hashem said, that's it, I've had it. I'm not interested in Yeduchen, I'm not interested in any of this. So the poskim say, therefore, the Prisha, one of the earliest Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah, so the Prisha writes that therefore this halacha only applies to a person who killed a Jew, because the whole source of it is derived from that. So if a person killed a guy, this would not apply unless he killed the guy maliciously. In other words, if a person just committed a vicious murder for no reason, so then that would also be. Because the person's Sama Russia. But the fact is that, but if, let's say, Bishogeg, or let's say in a military type of situation, you had a Jew killing a guy like you have in the situation of the Israeli army, so then those people, on those Kohanim are not possible. Those Kohanim are not possible. They're not disqualified by this. So that's the halacha. However, there were other times in Jewish history where this was an issue. And this is a very big shaila that came up in the aftermath of World War I, because of the fact that we know that in the battles that took place in World War I, you had Jews on both sides, right? You had Jews fighting for the Germans, and you had Jews fighting for the Allies. And the question, the Kohanim who were drafted into the army, they had no choice, and they went to the war, and they came back, and they knew they killed people. So the question was, you know, do I have to be concerned? There were Jewish boys on the other side also. Do I have to be concerned that maybe I one of those people was somebody that I killed? There were tshuvas that were written about this. This question, unfortunately, is sad to think about. No one thinks in those terms, because we somehow assumed that all the good guys were on the American side and everyone else were the bad guys, but that wasn't the case. You had a lot of Yidden that were on the other side also. So therefore, this was a shaila. So that already, if a person knew that he had in fact killed a Jew in that situation, that I don't know what the halal. That was a shaila that was discussed, right? The shaila is also discussed. I couldn't get to the bottom of it, but there are tshuvas written about Rachman Son, if it was in a car accident or something like that, if that would be different. There, as far as to say, maybe that is different. But nevertheless, the point I'm trying to make is that here you have a halacha that is driven by this din of Ein Kateger and Asa Sanegar. In other words, the person himself who was the source of the problem. So even if tshuva was done, but that those hands that did such an act cannot duchen, right? And so too Aaron, even though he did tshuva, even though Hashem gave him a means to do tshuva for the Chet HaEgel, but when it came to the performance of the ritual of the Parah Aduma, Aaron could not get involved. Now, yes?
Just focusing this week, there was a problem in Israel with friendly fire.
So that's a question. That's a question. If you have a friendly fire situation, so that's considered probably an ones. But even so, it's not so simple. I hope it's not, you know, negated to anybody. But if it was, they should probably seek out a competent rav to deal with that question. You know, but the fact of the matter is that this is the halacha where this comes up. Another case where this comes up, which might be a little bit closer to home, is if you turn back to the first side. So we find in the Sefer Chassidim has nothing to do with the Hasidic movement. It was written 400 years before the Hasidic movement by one of the great Baalei HaTosis, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And he writes, now not everything that's in this Sefer is necessarily the normative halacha. In other words, he has a lot of things in here which are issues that involve great piety, hence the name Sefer Chassidim. But he does say here the following, and I have it underlined a little towards the middle of the paragraph. He says, L'cheinim yesh ish ra ma'lolim. He's speaking at the beginning of the piece about the prohibition of chanufa. We spoke about this, about the fact that a person who does the wrong thing, there's an obligation to call that person out and not to flatter that person, right? We spoke about this several years ago. This was came up with Yaakov Avinu when he flattered Esav in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach. He said that seeing you as Kiros Penei Elokim is like seeing the face of God, which was outright flattery and outright really an audacious thing to say. So the Chazal speak about that this was Chanufa, and the Chanufa is a terrible thing. You're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to flatter. If a person does the wrong thing, you're not supposed to praise them. It's one thing you could say, maybe you shouldn't always rebuke a person, because we don't know today how to give rebuke, and often a person who attempts to give rebuke, it backfires and it makes the situation even worse. So therefore, the mitzvah of tochacha, which we also once spoke about, is something that is a little bit delicate, definitely. But to go the other way and to praise a person who did something wrong is absolutely reprehensible. So this is the beginning of the paragraph here, and says Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, l'chach, im yesh ish ra ma'lolim o ba'al machlokes v'gorim merivos. If you have a man who has a bad reputation, or he is a ba'al machlokes, he's a great divisive force in a community, he creates a lot of machlokes, But however, v'yodea laharim kol benimus, but alas, he has a beautiful voice. And now you need a chazan for Rosh Hashanah. And here you have it. So here you have the guy with the silk voice, right? What a beautiful voice he has. And this fellow is the guy who makes fights in every shul. So what should be with that? So says the Sefer Chassidim, V'rotzel espa'ul holtzi rami dechavosam. And he wants to, and he said, and he knows he has talent. So he said, he applies. Sends in his resume, he wants to be the Baal Musaf. He's going to be the Baal Musaf because he has such a beautiful voice. Oh, Yodei, let's go up a shofar. Or he has the talent that he knows how to blow the shofar, which many do not. Right? It's a unique talent. Right? Only a few people could do it very well. So this fellow happens to be one of them. So he wants to apply for that position. So he says, Im Yada Tzadikim Takifa, says the Sefer Chassidim, that if the people, the good people, have the power, lo yitznu lispalul olit kol b'shofar. They should not allow him to do it. He should be banned. Why? Lefi she'ein kateger nase saneger. Here you have it again. Because of the fact that the accuser cannot be a defender. This person goes around the whole year making trouble. He goes around making machlokas, causing all kinds of fights and all the attendant problems that come with machlokas, like lashon hara and sinas chinam, all kinds of things. He's the source of it. And now you're going to give him to blow the shofar. He's going to be the one for the whole community, for the whole shul, that he's going to be the Baal Tekeah, or he's going to be the Baal Tefillah. That's unacceptable. Ain kategan asasenega. What do you think this is? You think Hashem, this is going to stand well in God's eyes that you have this is like the Kohen Gadol going with the golden clothing. In other words, as soon as Hashem sees him, so to speak, oh, Hegel Azov. Yeah, now what can I do for you? Right? So same thing. Here you have this person comes in, Abamach Locus, and he's coming, that he's going to be the source, he's going to be the Shliach Tzibur, that the source of the community's prayers that Hashem should accept. So again, we have this idea that the accuser cannot become the defender. Now, in reality, it's a very delicate issue, and it's very hard to say exactly in every case, who qualifies. You know, this already hits home, because now we can create new machlokas, because now in every shul, armed with this Sefer Chassidim, you could actually stir up all kinds of machlokas. You'll disqualify every shul. Yeah, him, yeah, you know what he did. Forget it. He's going to be the Shliach Tzibur. I mean, now you ride the horse of righteousness, which is always the best horse to ride, right? That you come and say that, oh, after all, I'm not saying this because I have anything against him personally, of Chas V'Shalom, but it's because of the fact that I want to do the best thing for the Tzibur, and this man is representing the Tzibur, and how can we do such a thing? So it's very delicate. It's a very delicate thing, and it probably what the Rebbe Yehuda Chassid meant was only an extreme situation. And nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. So the fact that a person does, okay, maybe he should be a little more careful in this area of halacha. Okay, there's an inyan. You try to get righteous people to do all these jobs, but the reality is what it is. So therefore, something okay, he's a good person overall. He's a good person. So overall, he's a good person, so that's usually sufficient. But if you have a person who, unfortunately, is not, and this person, everyone who sees him, as soon as you see him, you cross the street, so that type of guy, just because he has a great voice, and you say, well, it'll be the most incredible davening, and maybe be inspirational. It may be inspirational, but the fact is that you can't have that person in that situation. So this is the same way the Kohen who killed, in other words, a lot of times, the Kohen killed the Shogeg. Now, just before we end, I just want to get back to that halacha of the Kohen, if you turn back for a minute, because it's actually not universally agreed upon. If you go back to that din in Shulchan Aruch, so what I said before was just the opinion of the Mechaber of Rabbi Yosef Karo. However, the Ramah comes in and says, V'yesh omrim tim asa tshuva nosei eskapov. Getting back to the murderer Duchening, so the Ramah says that if the person did tshuva, so then he is acceptable. And then he says, V'yesh lahakil abale tshuva shalo lino delos bifneim. He says, and in general, when it comes to tshuva, you're always supposed to be lenient, because you're supposed to encourage people that should do tshuva. So if you start making all kinds of restrictions and all kinds of limitations, so you're discouraging people. So therefore, we're mekel, we find the Gemara in many situations. You have in the Gemara in Bava Kama, Takanas Marsh, all kinds of things where the rabbis were very lenient to, in order to encourage the Lotinel Delos Bifnei Hatshuva. So therefore, here the Ramos says that this is what a person should do. V'hachi Nog, and he says that this is in fact the practice. Okay, so the Mishnah Berurah brings down that not everyone agreed with that, but nevertheless, Ashkenazim would be more lenient. Svardim would have the strict ruling of the Mechaber. So, you know, getting back to the case of the soldiers in the crossfire, we had Jews on both sides of the war. So being Ashkenazim, it probably wasn't such an issue because of the fact that they would all follow the Ramos Psak. They were all European soldiers, so they were following the Ramos Psak. So then already, if the person did tshuva, if the person came back and regretted what he did and said, oh, if I would have known, surely they did. If they knew it was a Jewish guy, they probably wouldn't have done it. So in that situation, they would have been kosher. According to the Mechaber, it's a strict din.